Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Melissa Mandala. She's a triple specialist of family medicine, lifestyle medicine, and integrative psychiatry, and double boarded in family medicine and lifestyle medicine. She is the president of Dr. Lifestyle Clinic in Newport Beach, California, the first lifestyle and integrative direct primary care and rheumatology clinic, which was awarded by University of California, Irvine as a public health site of excellence. She is also the lifestyle medicine director of RuMission, a whole person multidisciplinary virtual practice consisting of autoimmune patient doctor experts with RuMission as the mission. Dr. Mandala earned her medical degree at the Chicago Medical School, along with a double master of biomedical science and master of health administration. She completed her family medicine residency and lifestyle medicine fellowship at Loma Linda University. She is also nationally recognized as one of the first lifestyle medicine intensivists and serves as core faculty at Loma Linda in their preventative lifestyle medicine department, which is one of the blue zones for longevity. Dr. Mandala, thank you for joining us. And today we're going to talk about something I think that's really important, but most of us probably don't want to actually hear it, which is the negative impacts of alcohol on the gut-brain system. So thank you for joining us.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I know. And it's you, instead of maybe grabbing some alcohol or coffee today, maybe we can all just sip some water as we have chat.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about you and how you became where you are at today. Like, what drove you here?
Yeah, no, thank you. And I would say I'm someone who not only loves human behavior psychology, but also medicine and complex disease. I started off in family medicine, but knew that that was just one piece of the pie. I love seeing all ages, but I wanted to get to the root of, I would say, chronic diseases, because it often is a revolving door. People still get sick. They might need more medications or go to the clinic, hospital, ER, and still not get all the help they need. Or not only the biggest question that I got was, what can I do to do better as a patient? And then I also asked myself that, because I'm a patient as well, someone with who had IBS, GERD, acne, some mood hormone imbalance, and I was able to use lifestyle to actually balance that all out and reverse my symptoms. And so I'm just really not only open, but I see how it's changed people's lives. And my husband, as Dr. Micah Yu, he has ankylosing spondylitis. So I actually introduced lifestyle medicine to him as well. And when he was able to reduce his pain and get into a better state of health, we knew we had to do this for everyone. So I pursued lifestyle, but also mental health, integrative psychiatry, because I know sometimes, as much as we may have heard, eat better, sleep more, stress less, there's still some, I would say, mental behavioral things that we need to address. Sometimes it's the trauma, sometimes it's the anxiety and depression, or a whole host of things. So that's why I got into all that I do, because I knew that there's so many pieces to the puzzle, and we need to, at times, uncover every stone so we can help ourselves and other people.
I love that. So given, right, your degrees, multiple degrees, which, good for you, you do like complexity. How does this influence your approach to people with spondyloarthritis?
Yeah, I would say it's since in not only Dr. Lifestyle, but in RuMission, I've been able to just see how sometimes people have subtle symptoms, and some primary care doctors just wait sometimes months, years to actually consider autoimmune disease, especially ankylosing spondylitis. So to me, I like to bring it in closer to the forefront. I want to do early diagnosis, especially if someone's a teenager in their 20s, they're getting low back pain, having feeling fatigued. And I want to get the labs early. I want to be able to make this diagnosis as soon as possible, and especially partner them up with a rheumatologist. So to me, I would say, I've seen just so much, I would say, frustration, heartbreak, sometimes just anger in the system, because there's just years to diagnosis. And then by the time they get diagnosed, sometimes they're just offered heavy duty medications, biologics, which are, you know, can help tremendously. But sometimes I would say there are huge lifestyle changes that patients can make to really improve the effects of the biologics, but sometimes even reverse it, or to the point where it's more manageable. I love giving patients options. That is my goal and my approach, so that they know, can they use lifestyle, supplements, traditional medicine? And that's really what shaped my approach, because I've seen a lot of suffering, but I've seen a lot of hope and change lives.
Yeah. Is there any one thing in particular you've seen with spondylitis patients?
Yeah, I have a wonderful patient actually at remission. He's a firefighter who had to take some time off. He actually was in his young 20s, who was really athletic, but he had severe low back pain, joint pain, fatigue, couldn't go to work, had to change his career. And he tried a lot of other, not just medications, but lifestyle changes, but he didn't really know how to organize it. He didn't know what to do with all that information. And he didn't know what was really triggering his symptoms, what food and the flares that were, why he got the flares. So what was nice was that we were able to not only figure out the foods for him. I think it was white rice. So for other people, it can be chips, but everyone is different. And so when we're able to kind of dissect what foods can trigger, it just helped him so much and encouraged him to keep going with the lifestyle, because it's hard with different types of diets to say, oh, it's that one thing, but sometimes it's that simple.
And then
getting over the sometimes even the mental health component. I have patients who missed work, high anxiety, depression, but when they're able to address the mental health and even relax through the vagus nerve, they their symptoms, we have the MD hack, would drop by 10 points or go even to a zero over just 3 months, because we really were able to address the root cause rather than ignore it sometimes. Yeah. As we see in traditional medical systems.
So for someone like with food, would you recommend like a food panel, like a sensitivity panel or exclusion? And then we're going to get into what we're going to talk
about. Yeah. Good question. I know there's a lot of functional tests out there. People, even patients order them sometimes. I would say that's at times a lot of information to dissect. And so I really find more value in working with either a healthcare provider or a registered dietitian, because sometimes, you know, I would say there's some elimination diets out there that might be too strict in the beginning. So everyone's different. And that's why you can do it one phase at a time, one food item at a time. It's not a bad thing, but it's not 100% sensitive and specific and accurate. The more, I would say, accurate and useful information is what you do by recording through a journal symptom or symptom journal at home or through an app that we do in remission.
Okay. So let's talk about alcohol. That's probably an easy one to know that there's going to be a sensitivity. So we're going to talk a little bit. We're going to deep dive into alcohol's impact on gut health. But in terms of spondy, how do you integrate that into your treatment plan? Just from the top.
And I know alcohol for everyone is different, right? There's different levels of alcohol use, different types of alcohol. But research shows it's not about the type of alcohol, but the frequency of alcohol use. And in addition, there's different three to four drinks for women, or four to five drinks for men is kind of what we see is more moderate alcohol use per day. However, with binge drinking up to 8 to 10, one episode could still actually affect your immune system pretty drastically. So when we take in alcohol first, you consume it not only through your mouth digestive system, but it impacts the immune system. And so that actually lowers the amount of antibodies, T cells, it disrupts the microbiome. So there's endotoxins that go travel to the liver and bloodstream. And so with ankylosing spondylitis, there's not a huge amount of research, but there's a few solid studies that show that people who consume less alcohol have less pain, less stiffness, better functionality scores. And that's just the beauty of it. If you haven't, if you tried everything, if you've tried nutrition or better sleep and you haven't tried reducing your alcohol, I would say give it a try. Because there's a reason why after a night out drinking alcohol, the next day you get a common cold. A lot of people, oh, I feel under the weather. I feel like I have the flu. It's because the immune system does definitely take a dip. And so when thinking about making a shift, I would say do your best to reduce those the amount you have it, and then see how you feel.
Okay. And from the microbiome specifically, and gut health, like how does alcohol impact our guts?
Yeah, so when we ingest alcohol, we know not only goes through our mouth, our esophagus, our and our stomach with our gastric lining. There are studies that show immediately when you're digesting, sometimes it interferes with the water sodium transporter, so people get looser stools, number one. Number two, it actually starts to destroy the epithelial cells, which is the tiny skin layer in our digestive tract. And when that happens, even after one night, there are studies that show after one night of heavy binge drinking, you could have duodenal ulcers. So what does that mean? Small intestinal ulcers and changes in the mucosa. And they might be small, but over time, if someone's doing it over and over, that's when it causes more trouble, not only in the digestive tract to the point of potential bloody ulcers, or the potential of the leaky gut affecting the liver and then going into where the liver has a hard time detoxifying or having issues with alcohol damage to the liver, which definitely affects our immune system because there's less antibodies for our immune system, less T and B cells, and once again, even less of the cytokines. The cytokines are so useful. That's what the drugs actually treat and inhibit. So the TNF-alpha and IL-6 are the ones that get reduced.
So the cytokine, it actually reduces cytokines?
Yeah.
That's the fascinating piece of knowledge. I had no idea. I don't think most of us. I think most of us didn't even know what cytokines were until 2020. But that's fascinating. And what does it do to your brain?
Yeah, great question. So, and you know, with alcohol, so you might hear all this, people think, you know, mild or moderate alcohol is safe and okay. It's protective. There's like studies about the U shape, but I would say whenever you drink alcohol, even with your first time, just like a bag of chips, whatever you're consuming, and it's going to affect your brain or your gut or your heart, cardiovascular health. When you ingest alcohol, it does cross the blood-brain barrier. It is something, you know, yes, initially it relaxes you. It's almost like it goes through the GABA mechanisms and it, just like with sleep, it kind of allows you to sleep a little bit deeper, but then it becomes hyperactive. So sometimes it overstimulates the sleep where you're not able to have a deep night's sleep, and it affects your cognition. It actually, you're not able to have solidified processes from your short-term memory to your long-term memory. Studies have shown it affects the creativity and your executive function because it really impacts all stages of sleep, including your REM sleep. But in the brain, not only does it affect memory, long-term, it actually suppresses your brain system. So you actually feel more, patients actually get more anxious, more depressed over time.
As they continue to drink.
As they continue to drink more.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, is alcohol a stimulant or a depressant?
So in the beginning, it can it works a little bit as a stimulant, and then it becomes a suppressant.
Okay.
So some people get, it's almost like you get the high, especially depending on what it's mixed in. Most alcohol is mixed into sugar, and alcohol converts to a sugar. So it impacts insulin resistance. That's why we know patients gain more weight with alcohol too. Studies have shown when you're not only having more alcohol, interruptive sleep in about 3 to 6 months, even up to a year, you just from alcohol alone, you can gain 12 pounds in that amount of time for 6 months to a year. So it not only affects metabolic health, sleep health, but also brain health.
Yeah, I remember seeing somewhere, probably on Instagram or something. Yeah, but sure. It was like two gin and tonics is like eating four Snickers bars.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. It made me step back and go like, maybe I don't need to have one. Okay, so can we talk a little bit, and this is a new term for me, the gut-brain axis?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. So the gut-brain axis is literally because the brain, it has the vagus nerve. It's one of the longest nerves, and it is our parasympathetic nervous system. It is the one that innervates almost all the intestines, or all the, I would say, organs, the vital organs in our entire body. And we know that the GI tract is one of the longest systems in our overall body. So the vagus nerve is connected to our digestive system, our stomach, our small, large, even our rectal area. So when we are under a lot of, I would say, stress or trauma, a lot of people want to have loose stools. They just want to release their stools. Or some people get constipated. It becomes so slow because they're overwhelmed with stimulus. So you can have a different type of reaction. When it comes to the gut-brain axis, the reason why this is important for ankylosing spondylitis patients is sometimes we feel our emotions not only in our brain, but sometimes first in our gut. So sometimes we may have bloating, we may have a change in our stools where we're, after every meal, we're using the bathroom, or where you feel like, wow, I can't release my bowels, it's been days. And so when we're feeling nervous, or we're really feeling anxious, or just low mood because of a rough day, our gut talks, and it also tells our brain. So it's just a highway, it's a bi-directional highway. And if we're, sometimes we suppress our stress and our mood. So that doesn't mean we don't have it. Usually it's in our unconscious. About 90% of our environment of what's happening in our world is in unconscious. And that unconscious work happens in our gut. So everything is becoming, I would say, digesting. The immune system is there. The neurotransmitters, about 90% of serotonin is there. There's dopamine there, norepinephrine. So these are all the nerves, all the immune system, and the microbiome is very, very active. So that's why whatever we consume, eat, drink, it's very sensitive to, but also it can use it as healing. It can use it as a potential to repair and to actually improve the immune system, improve the brain and gut health.
That's fascinating. And this is, maybe it's something I heard more recently, but most of our neurotransmitters come out of our belly, out of our gut, right? We always thought they were out of our brain.
Exactly. Isn't that wild to just think, wow, I have a second brain, as a second neural highway. It's really in our gut.
That's, and so by alcohol eventually suppresses that long term. Is that?
Yeah. So alcohol short term and long term has an impact on our, I would say, because the Peyer's patches, the immune system is right there in the intestinal lining. So that gets compromised. The reduction of cytokine production and the T and B cells and antibodies get reduced. But also alcohol is really works on the GABA and the dopamine and norepinephrine. So imagine before it even hits your brain, where you feel maybe a little altered, or it's hitting your gut. And if your gut is healthy, if you're having enough fiber, if you're staying hydrated, you could potentially mitigate some of the symptoms and changes in your gut. So that's why I say if you have a balanced way of eating fruits, vegetables, beans, nuts, and seeds, that can really help the digestion process and repair, because a leaky gut is not good. But if you want to keep it all intact, it's actually so much better for you when you have really nutrient dense nutrition, and you'll have less of the negative impacts on your immune system as well.
So, in terms of, right, did you say 3 to 4 drinks a day?
Yeah.
Is normal? Like, is a not normal, but is a baseline?
Yeah, for women, it's about, 4. 4 is probably the better accurate question. And for men, 5 are. Mm-hmm.
So, a day.
A day, yeah.
Okay. I always think that's like a week.
Yeah.
It's been a day.
But per occasion.
Per occasion. There you go. So if someone is concerned about, right, because it's a lifestyle change to move away from alcohol. And if someone is concerned or needs guidance there, where would you send them?
Yeah, great question. And you know, everyone starts somewhere. Some people have been drinking for a short amount of time or a long amount of time. But and I would say research does show like chronic drinking, even 5, 10, 20 years does make an impact. So I would say the earlier the better is to just either start drinking more water. Number one, that's the simplest thing. Eat more diverse meals, and then try to either space out your drinking in between the days or the occasions, and find maybe like kombucha, which is amazing, like a probiotic, and or find some teas, because yes, some people are used to that relaxing feeling or that stimulant initially. So I would say find ways to kind of, I would say, substitute as you go. It's hard to do this cold turkey for most people, and maybe you're satisfied with one or two. So just find what is really realistic and do it with a supportive health provider, psychologist, lifestyle medicine. That's all. I do that all day, every day, because we talk about how we can find healthy habits in between and raise the self-awareness. So lifestyle medicine does approach that. Sometimes people need supplements or medications if they're heavy drinkers, but if you're just like a mild to moderate, usually you can do it with support and habit substitutions.
Okay, excellent. Do the effects differ from men to women?
Great question. It's not necessarily the effects are different. It's more of the standard of how many alcoholic drinks differs by a matter of one or two drinks. So there's no difference, but if we go into reproductive health, obviously we have patients who may have PCOS, endometriosis, fertility issues. There are patients and studies that show the more alcohol use, you have more trouble with your hormones. And so same thing with men and testosterone. Moderate to heavy drinkers can experience lower testosterone, lower libido. And that's because of the multiple impacts in their microbiome.
Okay. If someone is trying to like recover their gut, either if they're a mild drinker, continue to consume alcohol, are there any diets or supplements? You mentioned kombucha. Or strategies maybe people can use to maintain a healthy gut when you consume alcohol?
Right. I would say let's be practical here. I know a lot of people are still enjoying their sporting events, their social occasions, going on vacation. I love just being real with patients and say, you know what? It's okay. Maybe just get your non-alcoholic drink when you're out and about. Sometimes you tell the bartender like, oh yeah, give me the pretty drink, but make sure you don't give me refill with any alcohol in it. I just need one. So I just tell my patients, cut a deal with the bartender, make friends. They'll have your back. They actually are probably in the same boat where they want to drink less. And sometimes you can ask for like an apple cider instead, or you can just get really creative, still have some fun and whatever they refill it. I have some patients and people in the community that say, you know what? Yeah, just give me ice water, but make it look like alcohol. Put that mint in or that slice of lemon, and that's good. And I would say most people, you're not the only one in the room who may want to drink less. So find a buddy that you're like, oh yeah, you know, it's dry January. You want to join me? Let's just skip this time. And I have patients even who are a little bit more comfortable and saying, you know, my medications don't mix well with alcohol. Can I just skip today? And people totally respect that.
Yeah, I think they do. I will tell you though, I remember 20 years ago, I used to, I had a customer base that always wanted to go out to lunch and they would always drink.
Yeah.
At lunch, and I would have to go to the next meeting. So we used to go to a place and it was almost once a week, and I would find the waitress and she knew me. I'd give her $20 and I'd say, I'm going to order a vodka soda, but all I want is soda and lime. Mm-hmm. And I remember when somebody was like, you're a really good driver. I was like, of course I am, dropping them off. But I think you can do that. We saw it over the weekend. I was out having a glass of wine, but we saw it. The bartender was making three drinks that looked the same, but she only poured soda water in the one in the middle.
Yeah.
The woman asked her not to, not to give her any alcohol. Right. So there are ways for sure. And it is because there can be peer pressure. It's the same as like a cupcake at times, right? And we do like to have fun still, even though we have, you know, spondylitis.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we're fun people, right? Is there a consequence on medications from too much alcohol consumption, or is it mostly the body's response?
Great question. Every medication is different. I know there's anything from like methotrexate, Plaquenil to your strong biologics, but even at the pain, like anything, most medications go through the liver, the gut, and excreted through the kidneys. And alcohol does exactly the same. I would say the biggest dangers are with, I would say, opioids. So anything from Tramadol, you know, and Norco, but also serotonin, SSRI, so people who are on antidepressants or anti-anxiety medications. But when it comes to spondylitis medications, I don't know the exact details. So I would say that's a discussion you want to have with your doctor. But all in all, I do like to say you definitely, just like supplements, medications, you want to separate a certain type of alcohol with the medications and know the bioavailability, the half-life time. They're usually on the little inserts in your medication, or you can discuss it with your doctor or pharmacist. But yes, if you want to actually have the biggest impact of your medications, then you definitely want to reduce the alcohol use.
Okay. And then what about nutrients? So we've heard too much alcohol can reduce absorption of nutrients. So you might be eating a healthy diet, but you may not be getting it all if the alcohol is interfering. Is that?
Absolutely, Jill. You're so wise. Exactly that. Basically, when you're consuming alcohol, you're going through a rapid way of breaking down the alcohol, and it uses up a lot of B vitamins. So your B6, your B12, your folate, zinc gets eating up a lot. And B vitamins are really important because they help your brain function. They help give you the energy you need. And the zinc helps improve your immune system. So for using that up too fast, most of the time heavy or even chronic alcohol users, and I would say even mild to moderate, have really low B vitamins and zinc when we test them. So these are important. When people go in the ER, the first thing they're given is a banana bag, a whole bag of nutrients, more than just IV fluids, because we want to avoid the scary things, what we call, where patients get, they use up too much of their B vitamins. It's called recondyphes, where they basically, they lose their balance and are unable to walk. And we see that like socially, but this is actually a more detrimental way, a more severe type.
And is that structural or is it?
Yes, it is structural.
Oh, wow.
So basically, there's structures in our brain who depend on the folate and the B vitamins, and when it doesn't have it, it's almost like you're almost looking like you're about to have a stroke. Well, that's to simplify it.
Interesting. I've seen that. That's why it just hit with me. But I've seen it in people before. Okay. So are certain people more sensitive to alcohol consumption? And like, are there signs that you might be?
Yeah, great question. So a lot of patients or people who are sensitive to alcohol are either because they are sensitive to the sugar that gets converted way too fast, or they're sometimes allergic to histamine. Histamine is important because people may have MCAS or histamine intolerance. They can't actually tolerate certain foods or drinks, and alcohol is one of them. And certain types, of alcohol may be, better suited for them, but mostly for histamine, alcohol is not the best for them. And then sometimes there's enzymes that you see in Asians, right? That they may, they turn red right away because they're missing that certain enzyme to metabolize. So they're definitely more sensitive. And that's why you see people who take a Claritin or a Benadryl, they get less flushed or less pinked, and they're able to tolerate, right? But that's because of the histamine, but in there. And
that's
so
interesting. Mm-hmm. And so almost like an allergic reaction.
Right, exactly. So people are having a range of different types of allergic reactions.
Okay. We touched on sleep a bit, but is there, I've learned through all of the good doctors at Loma Linda that I've had the chance to spend time with, right? Like sleep is interrupted. Well, you mentioned sleep is interrupted by alcohol. So over time, with chronic use or consumption, like what happens to your immune system when you're missing sleep?
Yeah. So when you're missing sleep, it's, you're having not only either short or chronic insomnia. Sleep is an opportunity to heal, to restore. It's able to almost reboot. And when your cortisol is first of all going to be really high when in the morning, higher than usual, you're not able to go into that deeper sleep, the REM sleep, as I mentioned, for recovery. And you're more prone to not only fatigue, flares, joint pain. And then the amount of cytokines once again gets compromised. So at the micro level, all our pillars of lifestyle gets impacted. If it's nutrition, sleep, we didn't talk about exercise, but definitely we talked about stress and mental health. So each one gets negatively impacted if there is some compromise towards it.
And do you find that there's a tipping point when people maybe stop consuming or stop or reduce consumption, that things start to get better? Is there like a, if somebody was going to say, I'm going to do dry January, would they expect to see recovery within the first couple weeks, or does it take 6 months? I mean, I know some things you get in your body take months to get out. I don't think alcohol is one of them, but you probably have more information there.
Yeah, alcohol quickly is gone in the next day. But I would say what it if you're able to do at least 2 weeks goes a long way, because your microbiome is able to shed and create new balance, because there is a dysbiosis that happens, and we want to make sure that there's enough of the good bacteria to overcome the negative inflamed heart bacteria. So I would say give it at least 2 weeks minimum. 4 weeks is even better, and you're definitely going to still see positive impact given 1, 2, 3, 6, 1 year, just like smoking. Yeah. And alcohol does actually impact your lungs. I didn't get to talk about that.
No, that's okay. I've never heard that. So let's roll with that.
Yes. So basically, there is some lung vulnerability when you have consume alcohol. When you consume alcohol, yes, you're digesting it through your GI tract, but you're still, alcohol can impair the lung's ability to actually clear the mucus. And so when that, because at the lungs, it's our filter, our skin, our liver, our GI tract, these are all filters. The lung is a filter too. And it has cytokines, it has the mucus membranes. And so imagine, just like when we breathe dirty air or like polluted air, it wants to clear it. Even with alcohol, it does respond to it, where it has a hard clean that up. That's why, once again, we feel crummy. We have nasal congestion at the next night. Some of us sinus infections or feeling like you're going to catch a flu, because the whole respiratory tract, the cilia, all these things are impacted. It's fascinating, right? Because whatever we're consuming does impact, just like dairy impacts our GI tract and our skin health, more rates of eczema, more rates of asthma. So everything we consume in our mouth impacts all our total organs.
I've never heard that. That is really interesting.
Yeah. It's amazing to see the research out there. Like if you dig, it's there. There's and that's why I love that this is all science and evidence-based. And now we just have to have these conversations and bringing it out.
And cortisol, right? That's another one. Right. You said cortisol, it spikes when. Yeah. Interesting. This is, that's one that I don't think many of us think about either.
Right. Good question. And really cortisol, right? We see it go up and down during our day, either based off because the sun is up or because of our working, or when in the afternoon after we eat, it goes down a little bit. And then when it's definitely about to go sleep, our AM cortisol goes down. But when we consume alcohol, it keeps the cortisol up. It may, like I said, initially alcohol decreases the, I would say the cortisol relaxes us. It's more of a, but then it becomes a point where it becomes a stimulant. So that's why I would say the earlier you drink your alcohol, the better in your day. That's possible. Mm.
So day drinking is,
yeah. Is it's better than anything. Exactly. If you could have a choice, then so be it.
Okay.
And if you wanted a deeper sleep, and if you wanted to make sure that it doesn't impact even your blood pressure and your weight, earlier drinking is going to be best.
Interesting. I never thought of that. I don't think we want to let that get out in like the college realm.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I know in Europe they're daytime, they do it there, but yeah.
I know. Okay, what did we miss? This has been fascinating.
Yeah, and I would say the main thing is also getting social support. I have patients that not only drink alcohol, but they may be smoking or ingesting vaping or or weed or cannabis. So sometimes these are all substances. There's about 100 addictions out there. And it's because we are wanting that dopamine or epinephrine, that thrill, that excitement. And we get that same thrill by watching TV or looking at our photos through social media, right? Everything has an addiction. And I would say, just watch out. If you feel like, well, it might be a bit too much if I'm annoyed, if someone interrupts me, or if I'm frustrated when somebody says that's enough or slow down, or if that's the first thing you want to do and you just want to keep going and you're doing that at the end of your day. So if we're trying to reduce our alcohol or any substance, I would say that's where your exercise is going to come in. If you can just walk it out, if you can do some Pilates stretches, if you can phone a friend and just relax yourself by just venting, or just getting through the day by meditating or being in nature, all these things can be healthy substitutes to kind of get those days or those minutes stretch out to days, because really cravings only last for 2 minutes. So if you can get through the 2 minutes, just congratulate yourself, celebrate it as a win, and keep going, because everything that you do, it does make a positive impact. And when we do positive reinforcement, it goes a long way. Nobody wants to feel horrible, have guilt about themselves, because that can just be very frustrating. And we need more compassion in this and more grace.
Yeah, for sure. Amazing. Any final advice you'd give to anyone looking to reduce alcohol consumption or concerned about the gut-brain connection?
Yeah, when we think about the gut-brain, immune connection, those with ankylosing spondylitis or any type of autoimmune disease, I would say the main thing is pacing. So I talk about this in my private practice, but especially in remission, where I do a lot of the mental health there. And when we pace ourselves, we're able to slow down, we're able to conserve our energy and leave times available and energy and fuel for the stressful time, so we don't turn to alcohol or the substances that are because we're probably either bored, stressed, depressed, or anxious. Those are the common reasons why we drink or eat too much of ice cream or whatnot, whatever it may be. So I would say pace yourself. Remember the spoon theory. Spoon theory is, the 10 spoons, as you know, conserve your spoons, but also leave 2 spoons at the end of your day so that you can heal. That's the healing and repair that you can use. So I would say those are probably the two top things that I tend to recommend for the mental health aspect. And then when you're reducing alcohol, don't give up. Keep going. It takes even for tobacco, they say about 12 to 15 tries to actually quit. So that's okay. If you're just trying to reduce, keep going. Every day is a new day, and you'll get through getting a habit. And it's not just 21 days that builds a habit. There's research that shows 100 to 200 to almost a whole year to build a new habit. So commit to it month by month, week by week, and you'll see the change.
Yeah, I can believe it. And I certainly think to your point on whether it's alcohol or tobacco, 12 to 15 tries is a lot. And it can be that can be daunting, but I think there is good research out there, right, that shows support in some cases if a medication is available.
Right, AA supports. There's so much out there.
Right, and that I think the combination of support and a program or trying with help tends toward like a more positive community of people who are comfortable, right? There's harm reduction.
Exactly. Because it takes really someone on your side. We have in remission, we have rheumatology. The lifestyle medicine team consists of a nutrition RD, registered dietitian, and a psychologist, and then social support. Imagine there's so many layers of help because we have our whole beings. We call it whole person care because we have social aspects that might be affecting us, our own environment. So all these layers are so important to support you, but also just to identify triggers and potential harms.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been very informative and a lot of new things that I've learned. And I hope our listeners too. I hope you'll come back and visit us again sometime.
Yes, definitely. It was great speaking to you. And if you have any additional questions, everyone, you can find me online. I'm Dr. Melissa's Kitchen on social media. So that's Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube, where I share recipes, mental health tips, and all gut brain immune connection, science facts, and all of the above. You can see me at Dr. Lifestyle Clinic, where I see all primary care and integrative psychiatry, but also at Remission. I'm the director there, and you can see me there as well for lifestyle. We have a great team. We have Dr. Yu, who does rheumatology, more of the lifestyle integrative, and then we have a registered dietitian, and we'll have a psychologist and also some AP or PAs and NPs. At Dr. Lifestyle, it's more integrative and functional, so I'm happy to see you in different ways, in different states. Just reach out. So that's at Remission, and that's going to be remission.com or on social media, on Instagram, Remission. HLTH, and then on Facebook as well. So search us, reach out. We do meet and greets, and I'm happy to help. See you next time.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Mandala.
Thank you, Jill. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.